Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI invites believers to grow in their faith. As world leaders gather at the United Nations in New York for arms trade treaty negotiations, we hear of how ready flows of military weapons trigger indiscriminate attacks on civilians in forgotten conflicts. A pilgrimage to Rome of head teachers from the Diocese of Arundel and Brighton in Great Britain helps participants to recommit and refresh themselves as leaders of Catholic education. And Vatican Radio's Peter Malone shares his thoughts on film director Michael Winterbottom's latest release, Trishna, based on Thomas Hardy's classic Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday spoke about the two miracles performed by Jesus in this Sunday's Gospel. The Pope was addressing those gathered in St. Peter's Square for the weekly recitation of the Angelus Prayer. And as Chris Wells reports, after the prayer, he greeted visitors from around the world.
In his weekly Angelus address on Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI spoke about the two miracles of Jesus recounted in the day's Gospel. The first miracle, the raising of the daughter of Jairus from the dead, shows us the importance of faith in Christ.
In today's Gospel, Jesus returns life to a little girl in response to the faith-filled prayer of her father. In this miracle, may we see an invitation to grow in our own faith, to trust in the Lord's promise of abundant life, and to pray for all those in need of his healing touch.
Pope Benedict said the healing of a woman suffering from a hemorrhage, the second miracle, re-emphasizes how Jesus comes to liberate human beings in their totality. In both of these events, he said, there are two levels of interpretation, the purely physical, Jesus bending down to meet human suffering and healing the body, and the spiritual, Jesus coming to heal the human heart and to give salvation. He asks in return for faith in him.
Questi due racconti di guarigione sono per noi un invito.
These two stories of healing, the Pope said, are an invitation for us to overcome a purely horizontal and materialistic view of life. Although it is right and good to ask God for physical healing and to meet our worldly needs, it is even more important to ask for a strong faith and a firm trust in God's love. Finally, Pope Benedict remembered the important role of those who help the sick to carry their crosses. Calling to mind what he described as their invaluable services, he emphasized that care for the sick must be, first and foremost, about the care of the whole human person, about human beings who need human kindness and heartfelt attention. I'm Christopher Wells.
Thousands of campaigners from across the globe have been calling for clear action to control the trade of arms as the Arms Trade Treaty, ATT, negotiations take place at the United Nations in New York. In February, the Holy See's permanent observer to the UN, Archbishop Francis Assisi Chilicat, addressed participants of the preparatory committee for the United Nations Conference on the ATT. In his address, Archbishop Chilicat said, with other states and the various actors of the international community, the Holy See shares the view that the principal objective of the treaty should not be merely the regulation of the conventional arms trade, but should be, above all, the disarming of the international illicit market. He denounced what he called an unregulated and non-transparent arms trade due to the absence on the international level of effective monitoring systems that causes a series of humanitarian consequences. Meanwhile, reports on the conflict in Syria, like recent conflicts in Sudan, Sierra Leone, Liberia and Congo, underscore the urgency of common sense rules on the international transfer of weapons. Campaigners are calling for a strong arms trade treaty to prevent weapons from getting into the hands of human rights abusers and warlords. Just before the negotiations, an international human rights organization released a report examining the impact of irresponsible supplies and misuse of weapons, munitions, and armaments, resulting in civilian casualties and thousands of people being displaced. For example, in the world's newest nation, South Sudan, the report says the flow of military weapons from China, Sudan, and Ukraine has triggered indiscriminate attacks by both the South Sudanese armed forces and armed opposition groups, with tragic consequences on South Sudanese civilians. I spoke to Helen Hughes, a researcher at Amnesty International, the organization that has just released the report, claiming the continued supply of weapons to armed militias is causing conflict in South Sudan to continue. Referring to the Amnesty report, it says there's a flow of military weapons from China, Sudan, and Ukraine, triggering indiscriminate attacks in South Sudan. Would you say it is actually the continuing supply of weapons that is causing the attacks?
The continued supply is enabling the attacks to carry on. Amnesty has documented these irresponsible supplies and the misuse of weapons by both the South Sudan armed forces and armed opposition groups, which is resulting in civilian casualties and thousands of people being displaced in South Sudan. For example, we've documented new Chinese-made T-72 landmines. These are anti-vehicle mines, so they're not prohibited under the Ottawa Treaty. And these have been laid in the Greater Upper Nile region of South Sudan by the armed opposition group, the South Sudan Liberation Army. They have grave consequences for the civilians. On the 9th of October in 2011, 20 people, including four children, were killed when an anti-vehicle landmine was detonated by the bus they were traveling on.
So, Helen, you're saying that the current arms trade treaty is not being respected. What kind of treaty is it?
Well, at the moment, there isn't actually a treaty, but in a matter of a few days, world leaders will gather in New York at the United Nations to begin negotiations on a global arms trade treaty. World leaders can stop the massive human suffering that is being fueled by the global arms trade. Now, for example, at least 60% of the human rights violations that Amnesty International documents in a 10-year study involved the use of small arms and light weapons. And these findings are supported by evidence from the UN and other organizations as well.
As you mentioned, on Monday, the world leaders are gathering for the arms trade treaty negotiations at the UN in New York. Does Amnesty have a message for them, and what kind of treaty are you calling for?
Amnesty International wants a global arms trade treaty with strong rules to save lives and protect human rights. Now, what that means is we want a golden rule on human rights that will stop an arms transfer where there is a substantial risk that it will be used to commit or facilitate serious violations of international human rights law or international humanitarian law. We want a comprehensive scope on all conventional arms, so not just those used in military operations, but those also used for internal security law enforcement operations. If you look at what's been happening across the Middle East and North Africa in 2011, this is particularly important. And we also want a robust implementation and enforcement mechanisms to ensure that the treaty has teeth.
Helen, I was reading the synopsis of the report, and is mentioned a clandestine delivery of battle tanks from the Ukraine to South Sudan involving transfers via Kenya and Uganda and including shipping companies from Germany, Ukraine, the UK and the Isle of Man. Does this mean that all those mentioned are not only compliant, but they're also making money on the trade?
The problem with this particular case, as it's been highlighted, it shows a lack of controls, particularly over the transportation of arms shipments. Now, this is a problem which pervades both national controls and also some of the parameters of the EU arms embargo. Again, with the arms trade treaty, we would want to make sure that all actual sort of stages of an arms shipment, including the companies that are involved in shipping the arms, is also regulated to a high standard.
And seeing the enormous amounts of money involved in the arms trade, there are bound to be problems on Monday. But are you hopeful that these negotiations will actually result in a good and binding agreement?
We are hopeful in that there are a good many states across the world regions who do want to negotiate a strong treaty. Many of the governments in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly those countries that are blighted by the impact of irresponsible arms transfers, countries across Latin America, for example, as well, are in favor of negotiating a strong arms trade treaty. Obviously, there's a big players like China, Russia, and the US who are going to wield influence on the negotiations. Today, we actually have a global day of action with lots of popular campaigning stunts, and we're trying to really raise awareness among the public and across the media about the importance of ordinary people making sure that they demand their governments play a positive and progressive role at the United Nations when it comes to the negotiation of this treaty.
So we can all do something, right?
Yes. Yes, indeed. There is events taking place, there is petitions, there is publicity stunts, and it's about making sure that people are aware of what exactly is happening.
You're absolutely right. I didn't know there was no arms treaty in place, and it's quite shocking. I know there's a cluster bomb ban that has been approved, but I thought that applied to all arms.
No, there is the convention prohibiting cluster munitions. There's also, obviously, the anti-personnel landmine treaty, but there isn't a global treaty regulating all conventional arms. And we're talking about your small arms, assault rifles, pistols, revolvers, through to your grenade launchers, through to your artillery, and through to your bigger weapon systems, such as tanks, aircraft, fighter jets, helicopters, vehicles, and all the accompanying kind of munitions that are being used for those different types of weapons. We want a treaty that will cover all of those so that they are strictly regulated.
Thank you very much. Is there anything you'd like to add to that?
That the end of the negotiations will be in the end of July, but throughout the whole month of July, we'll be lobbying and campaigning for this and calling on all supporters around the world to make sure that their governments are behind a strong treaty.
Fresh wind in our sails is the theme of a pilgrimage involving around 40 head teachers from the Diocese of Arundel and Brighton in Great Britain, together with their bishop, Kieran Connery. The aim of the pilgrimage was to allow the participants to recommit and refresh themselves as leaders of Catholic education. Part of the programme included a visit to Vatican Radio, where three of the head teachers contributed to a roundtable discussion with Sean Patrick Lovett on some of the joys and challenges of running a Catholic school in Britain today. Aside from Bishop Kieran Connery, the panel included James Kilmartin of Cardinal Newman College, Finola Johnson of St Paul's Primary School, and Stephanie Bell of Rides Hill Preparatory School. James Kilmartin, acting head teacher at Cardinal Newman Catholic School in Hove, broke the ice answering Sean's question regarding the sheer number of pupils at his institute.
We've got 2,106 students on roll.
And how many teachers to handle 2,106 students?
It's about 150 teachers, including part-timers, but there's also a lot of support and administrative staff. So overall, there's about 200 staff in the school.
Does it often happen that you pass people in the street and they say hello and you don't know who they are?
Very
or
often.
Where they
come from? Yeah,
I should imagine. Right. And lots of challenges facing head teachers today, but we're a good news radio station as well. And so rather than get into the challenges, let's talk about some of the joys and satisfactions.
Well, I think it's a great privilege, really, first of all, to work in Catholic education, but even more to lead a Catholic comprehensive school. And, you know, you get a great sense of vocation and where your own faith and your work is coming together. You know, I suppose it's particularly appropriate with the school being called Cardinal Newman School, that John Henry Newman had this very clear idea that we've all got a special duty to do and that we're links in a chain. And I think you get a real sense of that. So that sense of fulfilling your vocation is a great joy to me personally, and I hope to others too. But of course, you're involved in the formation of young people, and I don't think there can be more exciting work than that, you know, allowing them to realise their God-given talents and to become, you know, more fully human, really. And we're not an exam factory, although we do very well in exams and in terms of academic success.
It's a touch of pride.
It is about the development of the whole person, and that includes students, but it also includes staff as well.
Certainly. Finula, you're from St Paul's Roman Catholic Primary School. You've been the head teacher there for how long?
Well, at that particular school, 22 years.
My gosh, you must have gone in. You were a child in swaddling clothes.
I should say that. Yes. Somehow knew you would.
You did. 100% Catholic.
100% Catholic, yes.
Is that an advantage or a disadvantage?
You can look at it in both ways. Mm. So in terms of our ability to evangelise, a disadvantage. Mm. In terms of our ability to have a common language and a common value and a common expectation and for children to have uncluttered messages from home, from school, an advantage.
What's the added advantage to parents? Why do they choose a Catholic school?
If you ask that question, you'll get a superficial answer initially before their child starts, which is going to be based on, because high academic achievement is very well known, that your child will pass their exams, etc., etc. Then they'll move on to behaviour and discipline, which is perceived we do better.
Mm-hmm.
But I would actually find that in a little bit of time, if I truly listen to what the parents are saying, they're saying what James has said, which actually what they're truly looking for is that we'll support them in making and helping form the uniqueness of their own child. That we'll follow the child's learning and that together we'll take the child on what we hope is a journey to human wholeness. Interesting that James and I say similar things, but then we should.
On the question of journey, this is a journey for you. It's a pilgrimage, isn't it, Stephanie?
It is.
And there have been three such pilgrimages?
I've been very blessed to come on three of these, which have been personally a wonderful opportunity to reflect on my vocation in education and as a Catholic leader, and especially also us bringing us all together as heads, led by Bishop Kieran. We feel very well supported. We feel very... our jobs can be lonely sometimes, so this is a chance to share. And also Mary Reynolds, the Director of Education of the Diocese, is always there to support us. And by being together on something like this, we can then later phone up if we want to, if we need any advice in our work.
So if one of your colleagues was doubtful about going on such a pilgrimage, say something is organised like this next year, what would be your advice to them? Why should they come?
It is so inspiring and uplifting. It is a chance to pray together, a chance to reflect and to be inspired, keynote speakers and all the marvellous things, and indeed being here on your radio channel.
Thank you. You mentioned Bishop Kieran, and there he is. Too bad this isn't television. We could see him over there. Bishop Kieran, yes, you and the schools invest financially your time, your energy, your resources into developing Catholic leaders for schools. Part of it is the program of bringing them to Rome. Tell us some of those benefits. Tell us some of your joys and satisfactions in being part of this organization.
I remember, I think the first time we came, we had two very different experiences. We went to a papal audience one day, and that was impressive enough. Then the next day we went down to the catacombs and had mass down in the chapel of the popes. And that was an enormously moving experience. And I think it got people back to their roots. It reminded them about being Catholic and then why we're Catholic and the importance of handing on that message. There's a generation of children entrusted to these people now who have to hear the authentic message of the gospel in Jesus Christ. And these are the people that are doing it, first of all. Parents, yes. At baptism, they're entrusted with the task of bringing up their children in the practice of the faith. But often in practice, it's the school where children learn to be part of a believing community.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, a postcard from Rome. The image that sticks out in your mind of this pilgrimage, of this visit.
Well, so far it's being at the residence of the Ambassadors of the Holy See on this beautiful balcony and seeing the panoramic view of Rome. I thought that was a very powerful image for me. But I've just found this pilgrimage so inspirational and refreshing.
Nona, your postcard from Rome.
So we're here to renew. We're here to be together. And this is, like Stephanie, this is my third time. And I come back to seek more.
But the picture you take away with you?
The picture I take away...
The one you're going to frame and put over your mantelpiece at home.
Listening to you earlier, talking about you going up the stairs type of picture postcard from Rome, conversations about people I meet, it is relevant, that there's so many people who work for the Vatican who are so on top of their game. I find that very interesting.
Thank you.
Hello. My picture, I would have one of the whole group of all of the heads, because there's a great bond of friendship between us all that is through this. And then I would also think of the Universal Church and want a picture of Rome overall that links us in our community back in England to the whole community of the Church.
That's very beautiful.
I share James' vision of that party at the Ambassador's residence where there's a group of people together who obviously get on well. They are friends as well as colleagues. And that's such a touching and reassuring vision.
And now my friend and Vatican Radio's film critic, Peter Malone, brings us his thoughts on Trishna, Michael Winterbottom's latest release, in which he returns to Thomas Hardy for his source material. As Peter explains, Trishna is a new adaptation of Tess of the D'Urbervilles, in which he has placed the story in a contemporary setting and removed it to the exotic location of India. I was very much captured by the images in this adaptation of the beautiful Tess by Thomas Hardy.
Yes, I can't read Thomas Hardy. I don't know that I should be confessing that on Vatican Radio, but I've tried to read Jude the Obscure and Far from the Madding Crowd, and I didn't get very far, and I gave them up. But I have enjoyed the film versions of many of his novels, and I do remember the Polanski version of Tess.
Oh, absolutely, with the beautiful Natasha Kinski.
Yes. So I had, you know, basically the background of the plot and especially memories of the ending. So it was interesting to see how Michael Winterbottom would adapt Tess of the D'Urbervilles to India in the 21st century.
Do you work here full time?
Only on special occasions.
And you don't go to university?
No, sir. Very expensive for my family.
Not that he hasn't worked with Hardy before, because I don't know whether you remember in the 1990s he made an interesting version of Jude the Obscure. It was just called Jude with Christopher Eccleston and Kate Winslet, and very much a period film. And then later he took The Mayor of Casterbridge, but he transferred it to the mining communities of North America. It was called The Claim with Peter Mullen. So Michael Winterbottom, who seems to me to be making a film a year, certainly a very busy man, and a variety of films, usually very interesting, does love classics. He also did a version of Tristram Shandy a couple of years ago called A Cock and Bull Story.
Seems so to me that he also has a particular sensitivity towards social problems.
He has, yes. He made a film about the journalist who was murdered in Pakistan, A Mighty Heart, with Angelina Jolie. So, yes, quite a range of interests, and I noticed he won some prizes even from Cygnus for a film about Afghan refugees making their way to England called In This World, and a documentary called Road to Guantanamo. So, actually, one of the stars of Road to Guantanamo, Riz Ahmed, plays the central male character in Trishna.
Can you get Trishna to serve me lunch in my room from now on?
Reading your review, I do get the feeling that you enjoyed the film.
I did, except, in a way, it's very slow-moving and it's fairly low-key that Trishna, the Indian version of Tess, seems often a very passive personality. Perhaps she is in the book, I don't know, but I was just struck by how passive she is.
The Kama Sutra says there are three different kinds of heroines you're allowed to make love to. The maid, the single lady, and the courtesan. So which one are you?
I don't know.
I think you're all three.
She's played by Frida Pinto, who was significant in Slumdog Millionaire. And I felt that Riz Ahmed as Jay is almost too nice for the character that he is meant to portray. So that was a bit of a difficulty in the drama.
No, he's got a rich father.
Thanks, is that my only qualification, rich father?
But to look at, I think I suggested at the end of the review that the bigger love affair from the film is Michael Winterbottom's love for India.
Yes, you did.
It's just visually arresting most of the time. The scenes in Rajasthan, where Trishna comes from, the desert, the poor village, but also those magnificent palaces from the past, and then the transferring, they go to live in Mumbai.
Will you come to Bombay with me? Nobody cares if we're together over there.
Okay.
And the modern developing India, the change of commerce and industrialization, education.
Is this like how you thought it would be?
I think it's better.
And good purpose, they actually have the filming of a Bollywood song and dance, so you've got the Bollywood popularity as well, all in the film. But I think there'll be mixed reactions to it, I think. The purists mightn't be very happy, and some people might say, well, it might have had more dramatic or melodramatic oomph.
It is an exploration of dependence, both on an emotional level and on a financial level, though.
It is, and somebody said you couldn't make the film in the West because it's very much a film of class distinctions, of snobbery, also then of a morality and behaviour that has to be covered, an illicit relationship, so to speak. But that makes sense in the traditions of India. And I presume that's one of the reasons why Winterbottom set the film there. It's actually what you said about the dependence is important. There's a moment in the film where you realise very dramatically, although it's very softly spoken, that the whole dynamic between the two changes. It's they're together and she tells him about going for an abortion. And then his reaction is not what you'd expect, and you can sense a coldness, almost a hostility, and the relationship is never the same again. So I found that a powerful moment and helped me then move towards the latter part of the film and the strained relationship between the two, his becoming obsessive, sexually possessive.
I don't want you to be a dancer.
You don't like Trishna dancing?
You can dance for me.
And then the climax, which our listeners may or may not know.
What's wrong? You don't trust me?
It's a tragic climax, yes. I'm a fan of Thomas Hardy and I loved Tess. And I'm interested in this film, having seen some of the images that do appeal to me, so I'll definitely be going.
And I think, you know, you'll probably enjoy it very much, but even if it didn't have the plot, just the visit to India is outstanding. Looks marvellous.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.